It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about mouth-watering meat. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Eli Pope is myself, Paul J. McSorley. Now get your ticket ready, take your seat in our theater of the minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by Eli Pope and performed by myself, Paul J. McSorley. Bobby's smokehouse success is unrivaled, but a chance encounter with a peculiar spider threatens to unravel his reality. As secrets emerge, Bobby must face the consequences of feeding more than just his customers. Now, without further ado, I present to you the Pitmaster, a spider, and the unfortunate katydid. Bobby led a bit of a lonely life. The family-run smokehouse restaurant, fire-smoked fine farm meats, had become quite the business. Bobby had the knack to make the ordinary very different and tasty. It took up most of his time. He was the one in charge of running the smokehouse, and he took it very seriously. He took pride in his work and creations, and that's what they were. Culinary creations quickly craved the sweety, smoky, and subtly different flavors of his work. He tirelessly experimented with different techniques and spices, mixing things up until the tangy or spicy essence of the pits spoils tickled his palate. Customers quickly lined up every late morning to collect their bags filled with either their day's lunch or evening's meal. All of these long hours he and his family had invested was paying off. 5-star ratings nearly from the beginning, and the only restaurant that could boast those accolades. Yes, life was lonely for Bobby, but life was good, and his mastery of the pit was earning him a fame all his own. Bobby knew he couldn't take all the credit. His parents' skills were an integral part of the business's success. His mother's home-cooked recipes from her mother's and grandmother's cookbooks, her delightful pastries and pies she made from scratch, and his father's love of mixing with the crowd and taking their orders with a smile and yes, even his odd touch of humor helped draw the crowds in to sample their wares. What could ever go wrong with this? What with the perfect blend of love, family, food, and welcoming attitudes? Plus, the fixings were always stacked high on the plates. No one ever could accuse the owners of fire-smoked fine farm meats of sending them out the front door hungry. It was an impossibility. Big Bobby Gimble and his family's mission statement was, "We can't guarantee you'll be able to fit back through the entrance on your exit. Eat big or go home without ordering." The Gimbles live by it. They say running a business of your own is both the hardest and rewarding job you'll ever work. Bobby believed this to be very true, but there was a price to pay. There is always a price to pay, especially as a young man who barely entered into his 20s, a time when wild oats were meant to be sowed, poor decisions expected to be made, and a bottle of cheap bourbon was sitting nearly empty beside the cigar with the dying tobacco embers choking down in the ashtray. Bobby sat back in his iron rocking chair, which sat just off to the side of the two smokers nestled in the hot smokehouse, beside that table that did indeed hold the latter two things on that list of what should be going down. Bourbon and a cigar. Neither cheap, though. Bobby held certain standards for those two vices. Money was no object. Tonight, the half-full bottle was a Knob Creek, the cigar, a Punch bare knuckle, the new full-bodied stout with rich layers of cedar, pepper, and a touch of espresso encased in an oiled Ecuadorian Habana wrapper, finishing in a bold yet smooth, robust aftertaste. Much like his glass of Knob Creek, it was all about the finish. These two vices seemed to satisfy most of his cravings in this lonely, sweat-soaked business of tending the smokers through the middle of the night and into the early morning hours. It was all a process, and a key necessary part of that equation was sitting back and taking a load off of his feet to merely enjoy the fruits of his efforts from his chair, rocking slowly back and forth to the taste of a good libation and letting the smoke of a fine cigar roll across his tongue before exiting into a skyward moving plume. Bobby's head tilted back against the metal mesh headrest of his rocker as he first gulped the last drops of Knob Creek 12-year bourbon, what's left of the melting ice cubes slamming into his tightly pursed lips. In a fluid-like choreographed movement, his fingers swiped up the fat bare-knuckle cigar the moment they released the glass to the responsibility of the wooden tabletop and fluidly pulled the hand-rolled pleasure trove to mouth, pulling hard from his cheeks until the embers began to glow once again. Just before his eyes rolled closed for a brief second or two, he caught the movement up by the ceiling of the screened-in smokehouse enclosure. She was huge. She was a beauty, and her sudden appearance drew Bobby to push upward to his feet as the rocker slid forward, aiding in his bailing from it. "Good Lord, how have I not noticed you before, beautiful lady?" He moved closer to study her and the handiwork of her web. Bobby's tired eyes looked closely, soaking every shiny string of her designed web as it glimmered and shimmered against a mixture of the backlit moon through the screen wire stirred together with the beam of the yellowish light sprinkling downward from the glow of the incandescent bulb, cutting through the smoke, seeping slowly from the cracks in the smoker's door seams. "You must be eating well, little lady." Bobby smoked softly as another plume of smoke danced from his lips and mingled into the intricate web. The occupant's long legs slightly vibrated as if she were answering him in the only way she knew how to communicate. "No worries, girl. I'm not going to hurt you. You're safe here. Just the two of us. Well, the best I know, anyway. Just two lonely beings pushing through the night, right?" Bobby stepped closer as he smiled at the thought of his talking to a spider, a creature his mother was deathly fearful of. His dad would likely smack it into the cedar siding into a splat of spider goo if he saw her. But Bobby was intrigued. "Any luck catching dinner, girl? Kind of late for flies. Lightning bugs are probably too tangy with all that glow juice. Nothing but the scream of katydids around here." "You eat katydids?" he asked, as if she would answer back, "I love nothing more than the tasty morsel you call katydid." But of course, the only sounds he heard were silence from her amongst the constant rise and lulling whine of the aforementioned species. "So you eating other insects, is that like me eating, say, another race of human? Are you considered cannibalistic, or just a carnivore like me?" He smiled at his attempt at conversation once more as he turned to let his stogie rest in the ashtray while he picked up the bottle and poured a double shot's worth into his glass. "I'm gonna go get some ice inside. Please don't run off, little lady. I'll be right back. Can I get you something?" Again, a slight grin slipped across his lips, knowing she wouldn't be able to answer him. "Katie did?" Bobby stopped in his tracks, his back to his new friend. He shook his head slightly as he continued a couple steps towards the restaurant's side entrance where soda machine and ice was just inside. "Katie did?" Bobby swallowed hard as he began to slowly turn back to where he stood only moments ago. He looked up and was close enough he could see his friend had moved to the closest edge of her web towards him, her legs quivering slightly, causing the entire web to vibrate. "No." He shook his head in confusion. He must have had too much bourbon, but he was forced to continue speaking for some reason. "No way did you say that." He stepped back towards the web. "Did you?"
"Katie did."
"What the fuck?" Bobby pulled the glass holding nothing but melted ice and the double shot of Knob Creek to his lips and tipped it, drinking its contents.
"Don't go anywhere. I need more ice," he said in a stolen breath from the heat of the whiskey.
The glass door closed with a wisp of air, and Bobby's dark silhouette moved into obscurity as he rounded the corner towards the soda machine.
"I gotta slow down. I'm either drunk or somebody roofied me," he thought to himself. "I've been out here too long tonight. I may need a vacation. I'm trying to talk to a fucking spider. If Mom or Dad or, God forbid, Benny saw this, they'd have me locked up in the loony bin."
He spoke out loud to no audience but himself.
"She'll be gone when I get back out," he told himself. "It's all just an overactive imagination."
He attempted to force a grin but couldn't quite turn his face of unconvinced shock into a smile.
"I'm losing my mind. Too much of the vices. That's what it has to be."
He pulled his glass away from the ice dispenser, stepping back and slightly stumbling. Bobby smiled.
"Yup, just as I suspected. Too many libations tonight," he said aloud, now convincing himself that the spider was somehow an illusion and would be gone.
At the very least, silent, such as spiders are in the real world, the sober world. The glass door opened slowly, and with a look of hesitation, Bobby stepped out carefully. He felt a bit wobbly and unstable. Maybe even mentally unstable. He walked cautiously towards the smokehouse and pulled the screen door open. He purposely kept his eyes from peering upward to the corner of the ceiling, avoiding even a glance to see if she was still there. His eyes felt as if they were steel, cold and fixed, too heavy to allow the magnetic force of a damn spider to pull his vision to her.
"How in hell do I even know she's even a she?" he asked himself.
"I am, you know."
Bobby flinched, almost dropping his now over half-empty bottle of bourbon as its neck unsteadily tapped the rim of his crystal glass. It double-clinked before he could steady his shaky hand, sitting the bottle down on the tabletop firmly before reaching for the glass to swallow down a quick and calming gulp. He gave in to the pull to look up.
"We all talk, Bobby. All of us. You're just trained from birth to believe your superiority rules over the planet as the Alpha. Too wrapped up in that to believe anything so small and insignificant to your race could hold to any form of intelligence. We were here first. We allowed your race to transform into where you are now."
Bobby quickly stared at his shaking hand as the liquid within the contents of his crystal vessel began to tremor and morph into small waves about to spill over the edge. With all the intellect of his humanity, the only quick solution he could equate from the dilemma held in hand to refrain from spilling out or being dropped from shock, he gulped its entirety before dropping the clear snifter to the wooden floor and shattering it into scattered shards of broken glass, ice cubes dancing across the ground in rolling, sliding maneuvers.
"No," Bobby squealed. "This isn't real. None of this. You're a goddamn spider. You can't communicate. You can't speak English,"
were the only words he could muster. He moved swiftly over to the opposite corner of the smokehouse where a broom and dustpan sat leaning. He jerked his hand to the handle of the straw whisk and clutched it tightly as he made his way back around the smokers to the corner where her web was attached. He lifted it up and turned the bristle end upward, readying himself to mash her against the siding as his father would have already done.
"Is that your only intelligent answer to this quandary we are now both involved?"
She scampered to the center of her web.
"Violence is all you have? And you are supposedly the higher life form?"
He swore he heard the fucking insect laugh, but he stuttered, trying to quick search a response that would show he wasn't stupid.
I,
she interrupted him.
"That's the problem, Bobby, with all your humanity and the likes of most of your kind. It's always down to you, you, you. I took a chance on you because you seem different. Was I wrong? I saw compassion in your eyes this week as I watched from a distance. Did I make a mistake that will now cost me my home and life?"
Silence floated heavy in the air between them as Bobby's arms shook as he squeezed the handle of the broom firmly enough his knuckles began to whiten. but he stood frozen, his aggression attempting to wind down, his weapon beginning to lower, the bristles to ground, mashing before bending under the weight of Bobby's wilting ability to stand on his own without the aid of using his previous implement of death as a cane to steady his teetering body as it swayed back and forth. Bobby managed to backstep and flop down into his rocking chair. The momentum of his sudden drop into its seat almost led to him spilling backwards to the floor. He looked at the ground and the spray of glass and ice all around him. He then looked up to the spider he now wished would be gone, unable to accept the fact she was communicating with him.
"I'm hungry. I know you likely think I'm overfed by my size, but you've been closing your screen door more lately and, well, that blocks the katydids from stumbling in and into my web. It was a perfect world for a bit, the door open, the light attracting them in but dim enough as to them not being able to see my web."
I can leave it open again," he answered, realizing it was now talking about letting bugs into his smokehouse in order to aid a starving spider who scolded him for acting like an intelligent, dominant creature of this world, which he admits he believed he was, the supreme being between the two. Lonely, tired, but much higher on the intelligence scale.
"You're killing yourself. You know that, don't you, Bobby?"
Bobby reached and lifted his cigar from the ashtray, but before putting it in his mouth, he responded,
"So you're not only an intelligent, more supreme creature than I, but now you want to assume the role as my therapist?"
He forced a widened smile to form before shoving the moist chewed stogie into his mouth and sucking.
"I want to help you, and you can help me. Sound fair? And I'm not just talking about you. That was figurative. I'm talking about your species. Your people are killing yourselves slowly, and it affects every other living thing."
"Hang on, I'll be right back."
And Bobby pushed himself up from his chair, this time a bit steadier on his feet upon accepting the fact that he was indeed talking to an insect, or arachnid, to be concise. It was about 10 or 15 minutes before Bobby walked back through the now open screen door to the smokehouse. He needed to open the hot, heavy, counterbalanced steel doors and check on his briskets and other assorted farm meats, but he had been reduced to another task first, and it concerned food also. He held up the bright green katydid to show it to the spider. Her long, skinny legs immediately began moving up and down, causing her web to vibrate madly. The katydid began attempting to break free from Bobby's grip, but to no avail as he clamped his fist tighter around its body. Bobby knew how to prepare a meal, and somehow he sensed he would need to squeeze the unfortunate katydid tight enough to mortally wound it, so in its fight to escape and live, would not destroy his spider's web in a flurry of panic. He did exactly that and felt a slight crunch quickly mixed with moisture. He flung the now much quieter katydid upwards and into the farthest corner of the web and away from the spider. It squirmed, but with much less vigor than when held within his grip. The web shook wildly, and with each twist and turn of the dying katydid, it became more entangled in the sticky web. Bobby watched intently as the spider scampered across the entrapping silk strings, which were neatly and ornamentally woven together in an intriguing pattern. He was amazed at the rate of speed the spider did its work. It quickly encased its body on top of the katydid, likely injecting its poison into the body of the twitching insect, and then, just as fast, began to spin its yarn and wrap the larger katydid into a cocoon-like package until it was so tightly sealed inside a white sack it moved no more. Bobby had just watched an ambush, an immediate call to a battle for survival to which the katydid had lost quickly. A twinge of guilt rushed over Bobby, and his body slightly shook from the odd and sheer horror of its sight. He had figuratively thrown the newly captured slave to the lions for sacrifice, and it felt like it was all for his personal pleasure. Something he had never before thought to participate. He felt sick, and for an instant, fear. He himself began to discern the outcome of his actions. He now let his imagination begin to work at its breaking down and conquering his intellect. Scenarios of large armies of angered katydids gathering and plotting his demise for his conduct in capturing and turning one of their citizens over to the arachnids as spoil overtook his focus, quickly preoccupying his every thought. He had stopped watching the spider's activities and instead merely stood in a trance-like statuesque state, his tired legs from the night's work now feeling nothing. Just like standing on wooden stilts as firm as a pier, battling the constant pressure of the coming waves but never conceding to them. His spider now silent as a mute, silent like life and nature had intended. Was it all just a nightmare? Bobby's legs didn't move but just remained planted firm as all the normal night sounds of the evening continued. Crickets chirping, tree leaves rustling together as the breeze traveled in and out of the tree limbs, and the terrifying sound of the katydids, plotting, conspiring together their plans for retribution. Bobby knew deep inside his quiet soul that they would not stop until a strategy against him was conceived and ready to carry out. His world had turned on a dime, and there was absolutely nothing he could do to backtread and redo what he had done. He had started the war, drawn first blood, and now all he could do was wait. And no one, family included, would believe a word he could tell them, no matter how strong his will about it being truthful was. His sanity would be questioned. His younger brother would laugh at him. His father would merely shake his head back and forth in pitiful doubt. But his mother? Well, she would act much differently, with much more intensity in her expressions of worry, eyes showing the disquietude and torment of her first baby boy being somehow mentally sick, possibly from the pressures and anxiety of the workload the family had put on him with the long, lonely hours of chopping and preparing the meats. She would never look at him with the same unruffled and secure demeanor she had shown before if he spoke even one word about talking spiders and sacrificing katydids to them to kill starvation in the arachnids. He knew he should have just smashed that single spider into a gooey puddle on the rough cedar-sawn siding like his father would have to save his wife from ever knowing it had been there. Bobby wasn't aware of how long he had been standing underneath the spider's web. He was unaware of his expensive cigar lying precariously close to toppling off the edge of the ashtray and tumbling down onto the wooden table beside his steel rocking chair. He didn't witness the breeze lightly pushing against it as the moving air began to breathe life back into the dying embers, making them glow orange again as it slowly rolled toward the edge of the wooden table where it could easily fall to the wooden deck floor, spilling its ashes through the cracks to the dry leaves underneath along with scattering hot sparks across the planks from the impact. No, Bobby didn't witness any of that. He stood as still as the spider that would also make no movement on her web. There was a major difference between the two, though. The spider was so still, she wouldn't disturb her web, making it visible. She was stowing food for her young, and one katydid wouldn't complete the feeding of all her babies to come. She needed more to wrap and stow, and it was obvious Bobby wasn't capable right now, if ever, to provide such work again. Bobby, on the other hand, now appeared as if he had stepped from the parapet of mental health and fallen into a virtual death spin of brokenness. He wasn't the human she thought he was. She hadn't realized an unfortunate katydid would carry such a harsh impact on him by merely providing it as substance of life for her family. Sacrifice. All creatures experience it at some point of existence. She had. She only carried 7.5 legs out of 8 herself. She had overcome that obstacle and worked diligently to become able again to move very quickly across her web after toil and time. The girl who had swatted the stick at her had also experienced sacrifice for such an aggressive act. The venom she had injected into the back of her head, deep beneath those blonde curls, had caused such a large, festering and infected spot which became septic and killed her after a long battle in the hospital. Bobby, too, would likely suffer some form of sacrifice, much more than standing in the stupefied, vegetative state he stood now. And after the communication breakthrough they had accomplished together. What a shame. He was such a sweet boy. She was interrupted and scampered very quickly after the moth flew into her net. She smiled to herself as she quickly wrapped another meal up, much like she had watched Bobby wrap briskets in brown paper after pulling them from the fiery metal grates of the smokers. She smiled to herself in only a way a spider can, at the thought of how quickly she still was able to retrieve her meals after only having 7 legs and an awkward stump. Yes, The circle of life continues one way or the other. Human, arachnid, reptile, or fowl. We all do what we must do until we don't do anymore. Sirens screamed out in the early morning hours as they became louder the closer that they drew to the restaurant. Flames were now dancing and flickering in the early morning moon. It was a waning crescent that tilted slightly downward as if attempting to pour some liquid out onto the orange billowing flames below it. A white Jeep whipped into the parking lot, and before it came to complete stop, Bobby's mother and father's doors flew open, and they jumped and ran to the wooden gate that led beside the restaurant's interior and the outside deck where the smokehouse stood. The flames rose above the fence and clawed at the night sky as if they were from Satan's hell below, grabbing at anything they could reach to pull into their fury.
"Bobby!"
both his mom and dad hollered out.
"Are you in the smokehouse, son? Please answer us!"
The gate flew open and Bobby stood covered in soot and sweat. They pulled him away from the opening as the fire trucks shrieked in and came to an abrupt stop, their occupants jumping out and beginning their choreographed dance of pulling hoses and nozzles out while another hooked them to the hydrants. Water quickly began showering over the fence and on top of the flames as two of the firemen worked the nozzles shooting onto the deck and smokehouse as they pushed through the gate. Bobby flinched and pulled away from his mother's arms.
"What's wrong, Bobby?"
"She's still in there. Can't you hear her screaming? Her babies." "What? There's someone else inside the smokehouse?"
his father yelled above the roar of the water and men fighting the flames.
"Did I hear someone still inside?" the crew chief loudly asked. "Whereabouts, son? Children too?"
Bobby's head dropped instantly.
"Son, God damn it, answer me. Is there anyone else inside?"
"No. She's gone." Bobby lifted his tear-filled eyes, the moistness mixing with the soot and grime and making black tears stream down his face.
She's gone, sir. I don't hear her anymore." "Crosby, take two men with axes and breach that smokehouse. Could be a woman and children trapped inside." "On it, sir."
The men continued to douse the flames and contain the fire as Crosby and two others made their way inside the gate and towards the flaming building. Bobby's mother pulled Bobby into her arms, squeezing him very tightly and begging questions of,
"Are you okay, son? Are you sure?"
Bobby just sobbed and pleaded his sorrow for letting things happen like they did.
"We'll talk about it later, son. We're just glad you're okay. The fire is only out here on the deck and smokehouse. It didn't reach the restaurant. You're okay, so we're okay," his father assured. "Who was in there with you?" he continued.
Bobby wiped his tears, smearing the black across his face.
"It doesn't matter, Dad. She's gone, and you and Mom would never in a million years believe me." "What do you mean, she's gone? What's her name? Who is she?" his father begged.
Bobby's watery eyes continued to flow.
I don't know her name. She's not human. She's..." "What the hell, Bobby? What do you mean she's not human? We sent men in to find her,"
began to yell with intensity, not understanding.
"Are you in shock?"
He knew that was likely what it was.
"There's nobody in there, is there? You were alone, right?"
He leaned down and into his son's face.
"There's not a girl inside there, right? No kids?"
He began to shake his boy's arms.
"Answer me, son." "No, Dad. No girl or kids. Just a.
Bobby looked up and wiped his eyes with his blackened fingers.
"You won't believe me, Dad. She talked. Talked to me. I know it's not possible."
"You're not making sense, Bobby."
His mother spoke calmer and quieter than his father.
She's a spider. And I fed her because she asked me to. Katie did."
His head dropped and then bobbed back up, continuing.
"I'm not crazy, Mama. She asked me to help."
Bobby's mother pulled his head into her bosom and glanced over at her husband with a serious look filled with question and fear. She pulled his head in tight and pulled one side of his head into her chest while covering his ear and other cheek with the palm of her hand.
"We say nothing about this, Charlie. Nothing."
And then she leaned down and whispered the same demand to her son.
"Nothing at all, Bobby. Promise me."
"But..."
Bobby pulled back and stared into his mom's eyes through his black and tear-soaked orbs.
"But it's true. I promise. I'm not lying. I know it's crazy."
"Shh,"
his mama whispered as she caressed his head back into herself.
"I know, Bobby. I know. But no one else has to know this."
And she squeezed him tighter into herself as if to make the point of silence.
You lost consciousness, Bobby. You don't remember anything, okay? Nothing at all. You don't know why you said there may be a woman or kids inside. Maybe you fell asleep and were dreaming when the fire and smoke choked you awake, okay?
But that's not...
Bobby, damn it! Listen to us. You don't remember a thing. We'll help take care of getting this right. We'll talk later. They'll want to take you into the ER. Say nothing.
Okay, Mama.
Bobby sniffled.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay.
The police showed up just as the fire was being put to a smolder. The aroma was burning wood and smoked meats. The only real damage was the smokehouse and the first 10 feet of deck surrounding it. The fire inspector came around the corner holding a small baggie with something charred and brown inside. Walked over to a police sergeant, and the two talked quietly together. A few minutes later, Chief Buck Williams of the fire department and Sergeant Derek Fundell of the local police department made their way towards the Gimbels. Jane, Bobby's mother, was the first to speak up.
"It looks like the damage is really at a minimum, isn't it?"
she directed her question to the fire chief.
"I believe we have everything under control, ma'am, and yes, the damage was held to only the smokehouse and surrounding deck. We'll have to, of course, close you down until repairs and replacement can be completed."
Charlie spoke up.
"Of course, we'll be speaking to our insurance company and then contractors as soon as possible. Thank you for being so timely and doing such a fantastic job."
Chief Williams held up the small baggie.
"It appears as if this were the culprit. Who's here tonight when the fire broke out?"
"Our son," Charlie began before Jane cut in.
"Our son is the pit master and works the long night hours tending to the smoked meats for each day. He works so hard in such long hours."
"Ma'am, I understand that. Maybe you should set some smoking rules for employees, even if they are family. It appears as if alcohol may have played a part in this mishap."
He looked over at Bobby as if to help seal in his suggestion.
"There were some extenuating circumstances," Bobby began before Jane quashed him mid-sentence.
"We'll definitely be discussing some new rules and likely add another person to the night schedule," she quickly stated. "But if things are safe for now, it's been a hell of an ending to the evening, and I think we need to get our son home to get cleaned up and rest. We have a lot to do when the sun rises in a few hours."
"I'm Sergeant Fundell. You can call me Derek if you'd like. I think we have all the info we need for tonight, but we may want you to call your son back in to finish up the report at some point. No one is planning on leaving town for any reason."
Charlie Gimble spoke up.
"Of course not. This is our business that pays all our bills. We'll be getting things back to working order, inspected, so we can open our doors back as soon as possible."
"Just making certain. It looks pretty cut and dry, but there was a statement made that
Derek looked down at his notebook. "A woman may have been here earlier and had still been inside when the fire was burning."
"She's a spider, sir. She's kind of a pet, but she's gone. Her web destroyed. I fed her other bugs. I'm sorry, sir, for the misunderstanding."
The fire chief and sergeant looked at each other.
"Well, that's different. I've not heard that one before," Derek said with a bit of a smirk.
"It's true, sir. It gets boring and lonely some nights here alone, and I spotted her one night up in the corner under the soffit. She was beautiful."
"I think we have all we need for this morning."
Derek looked down at his wristwatch. "Sun will be rising soon. You folks go home and get some rest." Bobby laid back in his bed. He lived in his grandmother's home just down the hill from his parents' and brother's home. He enjoyed being close, but also having his own place. The night was cool, so his window was wide open, drawing the breeze across his room. It felt refreshing after his shower, and he actually felt like he could sleep, even though his mind was racing from the night's events. All he could think about was the spider, and the fact she spoke to him, and they understood each other. It was crazy. But now she was gone. The odd miracle and only proof he would be able to provide to show he wasn't crazy or drunk was gone. And he missed her? He wasn't done talking to her. So many questions would be unanswered. The early morning sounds in the dark began changing as they likely do every morning. The katydids and crickets' chatter and screams died off as the chirping of birds began to overtake the otherwise quietness. Bobby realized he had never really noticed the nightly bug sounds like he did tonight. Their dying silence felt almost haunting, but the bird sounds lulled him slowly into a much-needed sleep. A very, very heavy sleep. His eyelids quickly slipped into the REM cycle of dreams. Bobby rarely dreamed, at least any he remembered after waking. He rolled almost nervously in a restless back and forth, his body dampening the sheet that lay over him from sweat. His pillow soaked with his moist hair. He almost appeared as if he were swimming under his sheet, like a thin layer of the lake was attempting to swallow him as he struggled to rise above the surface. It was a nervous sleep that was growing into what could become sheer panic. In his dream, he could hear them. Screaming, taunting, planning. He swam harder, pushing his thin cotton layer off his body as if he had pushed through the surface and exited the lake. Bobby's forehead was soaked, the wet strands of his hair flattened against his scalp as if pasted tightly to the skin. His face was pinkish and red with beads of perspiration bubbling up through his pores, his hands clawing the sheet further from his body like pushing tree limbs and brush away when one runs through the thick woods. He was being chased in the sleep-like state of panic he was swallowed in. Out of nowhere, Bobby sat up with his eyes wide open, the whites of his big round orbs sticking out boldly in the dimness of the bedroom. His eyes glanced over at his alarm clock for muscle memory. 8 a.m. In his head, he knew it should be bright in his room. He felt mixed up and disjointed, still wrapping his head around the dream he had awoken from. His head naturally turned to the open-screened window that should be bright and airy but wasn't. There was an odor as he attempted to breathe in deeply. It was as if the oxygen had somehow been almost entirely depleted. He sucked in, but couldn't seem to fill his lungs with the breath he needed to fulfill his comfort level of not choking. And the smell was almost rancid. It smelled like dirt and grass and insects. He looked to his window closer, attempting to focus on the darkness that covered it, blocking the morning sun. His screen moved and began making a scratchy noise. Something digging, prying on the small, thin wire. Bobby determined that was where the smell was coming from as he fought sucking in another breath as he wiped away at his eyes. The movement baffled him. Suddenly, something shifted on the screen, just enough to let a crack of light shine through. There was a thin line whose edges were bright, almost fluorescent green. It looked leafy. But leaves don't move and scratch like this was. He pulled his exhausted body up from the bed and hesitated a moment, catching his breath through the odor that felt thicker than air. As he rose to his feet and slowly made his way to the window, it hit. The scratching, the smell, the moist emptiness of an oxygen-poor, musty basement full of crawling, digging insects. It was them, the katydids. They had found him. They were out for retribution of the one he had sacrificed, thrown into the web alive. Bobby practically ran from window to window looking for an answer that was hopefully not what he believed was true, but the remedy he sought would not come to fruition. Every window appeared the same. Clusters of now building echoey screams from each opening to the outside world of his home. Katydid, katydid, katydid. They screamed and hissed over and over as if saying the words katydid. In answer to their question, who died from being eaten by the spider? Katydid, katydid, katydid! Bobby entered full panic.
After double-checking each window and door and finding it covered by the bright green insects, he reached for his phone and dialed his mother.
Thank God, he thought to himself as he heard the ringing. His family would somehow save him. On the fourth ring, the phone fell silent for a split second. He spoke quickly into his.
Mom! Dad!
Katie did,
was all he heard until a loud shriek overtook the rhythmic chant, and then nothing but the long, hope-stealing sound of the dial tone. There was loud scratching on all of his windows and doors as if they would collectively dig through the screen wire, glass, and wood to complete their revenge of his act. But in an instant, a sound matching the resonance, a covey of dove taking off from a field in one large choreographed exit after spotting a possible danger, a dead silence fell over Bobby's house. A loud, resounding silence, so quiet, it screamed of total emptiness and void. Like the entire world of every living, breathing animal, including all of humanity, was suddenly gone. Vacant. Bobby had a feeling it held strong ownership in his mind. It felt definite, it felt fluid in his thought, as if an epiphany had swallowed the entire galaxy and slowly floated down from above, covering him completely with some knowledge he was too afraid of to attempt conceiving. But he did acknowledge it against his will. It overpowered his will to deny. He was all that was left. He cautiously but deliberately moved towards his front door. The door that now allowed light to enter the room unrestricted as it was mere seconds earlier. It was so hauntingly still and serene. Bobby slowly twisted the knob on his front door, cautiously, but somehow without any real fear of what it would bring. He really already knew. The latch clicked as the metal pivoting lock bolt exited the brass locking plate. He lightly tugged the handle, pulling the door open judiciously as he awaited to greet whatever the outside held for him. As the door sounded with a thud as it hit the stop on the floor, Bobby lifted his gaze to the expectation of emptiness. And that is exactly what he met. A hushed quiet showing no movement whatsoever. No animals in the brush, not a breeze in the air, no hum of distant car tires on the highway, not a single whir of air conditioner's electric motor. Not an insect's chirp or the sound of a single katydid. He was all alone. He felt it in his bones. He inherently knew there was no need to run up the hill in a frantic gallop to check on his family. He sensed what he would find already. Empty house, devoid of life. This was his punishment. He was abandoned, left to suffer a loneliness harsher than death, knowing he had brought it on himself. All in one act of kindness to one arachnid, at the cost of the life of another brand of lower life, another insect. He had meant no harm. His spider head merely asked help for her family's survival. She would be his friend and companion while he toiled through the nights, alone and tending the fires. No, she wasn't human, but she was something to talk to. Someone who cared. Someone who had a deep need that he could provide. A quiet thread slowly slid from the abdomen of a large dark blob with 8 thin long legs dangling from its center. It came to a stop just above Bobby's head, still standing in the doorway observing the hollow emptiness of his new world. The spider hovered effortlessly in silent observance. Bobby sighed. He had sudden urges that shouldn't take such precedence in a situation like this, but it did. An unquenchable thirst for a glass of bourbon over ice and the harsh woodsy taste of a good cigar. It would be calming. It would give him a depth of thought to figure out what in hell happened and what he would do, how he would find consolation and some kind of resolution to his actions. If he had only known what that action would bring in advance.
Are you okay?
A tiny quiet voice broke the thickness of the absence of sound. Bobby jerked his head backwards to satisfy his doubt of what he thought he had heard. How? Was all he could ask when he saw his friend.
It doesn't matter, Bobby. It just doesn't matter. I'm here. You're here.
The spider dropped a little lower until its long legs brushed the top of Bobby's shoulder.
Do you mind if I tag along? You look like you could use a drink. And maybe a cigar?
He answered without hesitation. I could. I was just thinking the same thing. And no, I don't mind at all. I know you won't bite the hand that fed you.
Bobby made his way to his humidor and then the bar where his favorite bottle of bourbon sat, Knob Creek. He opened a cabinet and pulled a crystal highball glass from the shelf, sidestepping to the freezer and adding ice. He glanced down to his friend, who peered upward towards his face.
Can I get you anything?
The spider bounced up and down in a funny movement before answering,
A katydid?
And then resumed bouncing.
Is that your idea of a joke?
He uncorked the bottle and poured an extra full glass, almost to the rim, before taking the cigar, cutter, and lighter back to the front door, where he walked out onto the porch and sat in his second favorite rocking chair. This one had been his grandmother's when she was alive. It was wooden instead of the steel one at the smokehouse. It squeaked, breaking the quiet as he sat back carefully, watching of not crushing his friend. Bobby held the glass to his nose and smelled its scent, taking a sip and letting it rest on his tongue, soaking in its essence of mossy oak and caramel. After setting the glass down and picking up the cigar, removing the label and snipping the end, he struck the lighter and inserted the tip into his mouth, lightly chewing it as he sucked in the flame to its contents, puffing and drawing the smoke through the leaves until they entered his mouth. He exhaled and laid the stogie onto the ashtray. He looked down to his shoulder to the spider that sat resting comfortably.
You know my name, but you've never told me yours.
I'm sorry, Bobby. How remiss of me. I guess I should do that, as it seems to be just you and me.
She moved out further to the edge of Bobby's shoulder so he could look at her without too much strain.
Part of me hates that fact. We've both lost a lot.
We have indeed. Our families are likely lost forever. I'm not sure what will become of us. What we'll do, how we'll survive.
My name is Sadie. Sadie May.
She hesitated a moment.
I suppose whatever we do from now on, we'll do together, as friends.
And family. Sadie May and family.
Bobby lifted his cigar again, holding it between his fingers in one hand, his drink in the other, while Sadie sat cheerfully but solemnly on his shoulder as they both stared out at the forest nestled just below the beautiful sight of Table Rock Lake's calm water as the sun glimmered across it. Both enchanted by the view and so engulfed that neither saw the bright green katydid nestled into the moist dirt hidden in the needles sprinkled to the ground from the pines surrounded by the oaks and walnut trees. It fought the urge to scream, capable at the moment because of the bright sun. But tonight? Tonight may just be a different story. The calm may become calamity. I hope you enjoyed The Pitmaster, A Spider and the Unfortunate Katydid, as written by Eli Pope and performed by yours truly. Keep informed on what Eli is up to on Facebook, where he has a group chat, the Mason Jar Room, and his author Eli Pope page. He is working on his website, but please excuse its unfinished appearance. So many writing deadlines to meet first. You can visit what's up on it so far at elipope.com. In the meantime, if you haven't started the Mason Jar series, check out the first book, The Judgment Game, in ebook, paperback, and Audible. It's a roller coaster ride saga of the Billy J. Cater family and friends. They are a dysfunctional mess, and like a car wreck, you don't want to look, but something makes you, and then you can't pull your eyes away. As far as the audiobook version is concerned, I'll give you three guesses as to who narrated it. The first two don't count. Hang on tight. I have first-hand knowledge that it's one twisted ride that will have you hooked and burning through pages into the wee hours of the morning. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. Also, don't forget, we have our own book out. Since 2012, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights has been keeping people awake through the night with terrifying audio renditions of tales from the darkest minds
modern memory has to offer. Now, in this first of three volumes, collected are 30 tales never before available by some of the most prolific and talented authors of the online community, each one accompanied by a suitably grim illustration by David Romero. Strange cats, body mutilations, demonic apartments, revenge from beyond the grave, and yes, even a man-eating monster or two. All of these and more beckon you further into the darkness. Turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Who needs sleep anyway? Check it out at Amazon today or by going to chillingbook.com. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Gyre has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012, and consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.